Lisa Cook, former MSU economics professor, got fired. Now, it is unprecedented, but it can happen, according to the Federal Reserve Act. And I was looking into this. 1913, the act said that the president can fire a board member for cause. Now, see, there's where the gray area is going to start coming in. But it's never happened before. Let's talk with Dr. Timothy Nash about this and all financial matters. He's our entrepreneurial and financial go-to guy over to Northwood University Center for Free Market and Entrepreneurism and all of that there. Dr. Nash, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I guess I'm going to be okay. Hey, you know, you as a financial guru, did you ever have, you guys all in higher learning and stuff. Did you ever meet Lisa Cook? You guys ever bump into each other?
No. She's certainly been a highly regarded economics professor at Michigan State. You know, she's got great credentials. She has two undergraduate degrees, one from Spelman College, the other from Oxford. She has a PhD from UCal Berkeley. She's a research scholar at the National Bureau for Economic Research. So, you know, she's been highly regarded, but no, I've never had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Cook.
Yeah, she's no slouch. So, okay, explain to folks, because I think the Fed itself is a mystery to a lot of people. And I mean, I haven't paid a lot of attention, but this is the first time I had this whole incident. The first time I ever knew that they had a quote unquote governor, because when the name came up and it said governor, I went, wait, governor of what? What? So explain the Fed in plain terms and her role as the governor thereof.
Sure. The Fed is the U.S. central bank, and it is it has stock. It has 12 branch banks across the United States, and then some sub-branch banks. Like the branch bank that we're affiliated with in Michigan is the Chicago Fed, but we also have a sub-Fed bank because Detroit's such a large, important part of the economy. There's also a sub-Fed bank in Detroit. It's the Detroit Federal Reserve Bank. So the point is that that's all privately owned, and the stock is privately held. And so the Fed, you know, was the U.S. central bank when it was created in 1913. And the interesting part of it is it's a private public partnership where the people that set the rules and govern or oversee the Fed are appointed by the government. They're appointed by the president, and they are confirmed by the Senate. And then the rules that govern the banking actually is set by the U.S. House of Representatives. So the governors, there are seven governors. There's the chair, which is Jerome Powell, a vice chair, and then five other governors. And they make up the seven members of the Board of Governors, or in essence, the Board of Directors of the Federal Reserve. And then there's something called the Federal Open Market Committee, which sets monetary policy eight different times during a year. And those seven governors and then five of the 12 regional Fed presidents make up the Federal Open Market Committee, and they determine U.S. monetary policy eight times a year. And the next time that will be up for grabs or up for a decision will be this coming September.
Right. And I know we're coming down to it. That's what we've been talking about mainly, is setting Jerome Powell and setting those rates. That's our most people, I think, is... That's our delve into the Fed. But now, just historically, before we get into Lisa Cook again, but just historically, why 1913? Why was it determined the we needed the Fed?
Well, you know, and that's an interesting question that a lot of people have. And you know, we had a central bank, a couple of flirtations with a central bank in the 1800s. And then we decided that we needed, quote unquote, more stability. But if you go back to, by the way, you go back to the 1800s, banks could print their own money. And so you had a number of banks in Michigan that produced their own money. And, you know, oftentimes banks would back their money with either gold or silver. And there's a lot of, there were problems with, quote unquote, a lack of expandability of the money supply. Would be the advocates who would like a central bank, would like to be able to expand the money supply. The difference that you can see, Mike, you can go back from there are periods of 50, 60 years where prices stayed the same. You know, a price of a bag of a bushel of Kentucky Burley tobacco. You can see the commodities markets. It stayed the same for 50 years. Now, what product do you know that stayed the same for 50 years? But it was a it was a bimetallic gold standard. And so there was just a lot of debate, a lot of uncomfortableness. And that's in the end, you know, without taking up the whole show with an economics lesson that would take a couple of weeks, that's the main reason was for greater expansion of the economy that we established the Fed in 1913.
And a lot of people say we don't need it these days. So,
well,
so the whole thing.
A lot of people debate it, sure.
Yeah, yeah. We're still figuring
it out.
It's
so
weird.
You look at cryptocurrencies, you know, that's another interesting debate as well.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I was just going to say, you know, as much as we figure, we think we know all about money and investing. We think we've figured it all out. It's still in flux. Something, there's a curveball all the time. So let me ask this then. So Lisa Cook, the big problem here, as I understand it, is she claimed two residences, one in Atlanta and one in Ann Arbor, to try to get better mortgage terms. And that's a problem. But is that fireable, I wonder?
Well,
there's the question.
The point is, it's illegal. It's a federal law, and if she is guilty and she deserves her day in court, the fact of the matter is, if she's found guilty, it's a federal offense that's punishable by jail time. Because what's happened is, when you're only allowed to have one primary home, and the reason for it is that people, if they claim multiple primary homes, the bottom line is they're probably not going to be living in one home for 3 months and another home for 3 months, or one for six and another for six. The reason is that people with your primary home, because there's less chance of you speculating with it, there's less chance than you having to depend on renters. So the bank figures your primary home is of less risk, and you get a lower interest rate generally. You have a lower down payment is usually required, and there's a much greater chance of your rate at the lower down payment and the lower rate being approved, because they don't think you're going to do any speculating with the home. And the problem is, what we found out with the financial crisis in 2008 was that a lot of these homes that were speculative in nature had been literally signed on as the primary residence, and again, you can only have one. And the lack of governance on this was one of the causes of the financial crisis of 2008. So this is a severe offense, and we want to keep speculation at bay, because we want banks to know the kind of risk they're in with a home. And if it's your primary home, they don't think you're going to rent it out. They don't think you're buying it to speculate, like you might buy two or three or four other homes. You might be buying them in a subdivision because you think that subdivision's hot, and maybe it isn't hot, and maybe people aren't ready to buy it, or there's a unforeseen recession, but you're holding 10 mortgages. Well, the bank is going to want a higher down payment on those, and they're going to be charging a higher interest rate to mitigate some of their risks. And so in this case, the argument is, within 2 weeks, Dr. Cook purchased two homes, and both of them were labeled, at least according to the federal records, and again, she deserves her day in court, that both of them were listed as primary residences. And for somebody who's taught macroeconomics, public policy at Michigan State, these are things you go over in a principal's class on money and banking.
That's what's surprising, is I can't imagine that she would. It's intentions, either intentionally done, or she just didn't think there was any problem with it, because she's not stupid.
It could easily be an oversight. You know, she may have had some work done by an attorney, and that attorney missed something or misunderstood what was happening.
I think
what's important is that this is going to be handled very quickly. In my opinion, it's going to make it to the Supreme Court in all likelihood, maybe before the end of the year. She's got a highly regarded attorney, Abby Lowell, who has represented Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, and Ivanka Trump, his daughter, as well as Hunter Biden. He's a well-known top-flight attorney, and his argument is that she hasn't been charged, which is true. She's not legally been charged yet, and therefore there isn't a case to litigate yet. And on the other hand, the president's saying, look, the evidence is there. Director Pulte has pointed out that the evidence is clear. Here are the documents. And so my guess is something will happen in court quickly, and we're going to find out whether it was an honest mistake or whether it's something that's a little bit more difficult to swallow. And then Dr. Cook's going to have to deal with it in court or potentially resign and the issue goes away.
And we get a replacement and on it goes. You know what, Tim? You and I, now you landed in the perfect spot, but you and I both, we should have been lawyers. We missed the boat, man. Those people are making so much money these days. Everybody's suing everybody.
I thought long and hard about law school.
I didn't.
In fact, just, you know, for what it's worth, Jerome Powell's advanced degree is in law.
See, I think you would be a good lawyer. I'd hire you. Me, on the other hand, I would need you more than that, more than I'd be a lawyer. Dr. Timothy Nash, the director over there at Northwood University. It's all about advancement of free enterprise and entrepreneurship. I just love saying that. And you know what I have to say contractually? My wife's alma mater. Okay.
And one of our proud alums.
Yeah.
That we are very proud of.
Well, the only choice that I think you could probably look at that Lisa, the big hair lady, has made over the years since graduating Northwood is this Hanyak Mike that she found. I don't know about that guy.
Hey, that's what I hear.
Yeah. Dr. Nash, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, pal. We'll talk again soon.
Likewise. Keep up the great work, Mike. Take care.
Thanks, buddy. See ya.